సశంకచక్రం సకిరీటకుండనం సపీతవస్త్రం సరసీరుహేక్షణం సహారవక్షస్థలశోభికౌస్తుభం నమామి విష్ణుం శిరసా చతుర్భుజం. Dear friends, we are into the seventh lecture of the series. In today's lecture, we are going to talk about the social, cultural and religious aspects of the domestic rituals. Well, we will first have an idea about what the Vaisheshikas have to say about the entire world. The entire world is divided into seven categories: Dravya, Guna, Karma, Samanya, Vishesha, Samavaya, Abhavaha. Dravya, substance; Guna, qualities; Karma, the action; Samanya, generality; Vishesha, particularity; Samavaya, the inherence; and Abhava, the non-being. These are called as the seven categories. Where we have seen in the course of the last six lectures that each one of these categories have been in connection with, or they are some relevance to, the Grihya rituals, the domestic rituals, as we have seen so far. But let us come to the Dravya, substance. They are supposed to be nine in number. The four elements of water, earth, agni, that is fire, and wind. And added to that, we have the dik, the direction; the Atman, the self; Manas, the mind; and Akasha and Kala, that is space and time. Well, each one of these has got relevance to the Grihya rituals. The Prithvi, for instance, earth, that is in the preliminaries of the any of the ceremonies for that matter, there is a small brief ritual called Ankurarpana, where earthly pots will be filled with sand and some of the grains will be sprinkled over it, soaked grains will be sprinkled. That growth is indicative of the fertility that is expected of the family. Then we come to water. Well, water has got a lot of significance. Even the very first act of Achamana, that is sipping the holy water and then offering to Varuna in a pot. And in several other ways, the water has got great significance, as we have seen in the course of the last six lectures. Similarly, Agni. All the rituals are performed in the presence of Agni, the fire. The fire ritual is a very, very important ingredient in every ritual, for that matter, it's part of it. And as for wind, we have seen in one of the hymns of the wedding ritual, well, the husband prays to the wind god, "Oh, wind god, please unite our minds." That's the prayer that's addressed to wind, and in many ways it is being very significant. Now we'll come to the space and time. Well, they are important for any ritual for that matter. Space and time are infinite. They are not perceived, but they are inferred through their characteristics. Let us first turn our attention to the time, the wind. The time is supposed to have five characteristics: Vartana, continuity; Parinama, modification; Kriya, activity; Paratva, that is being new; Aparatva, being old. All these things are associated with the time. As it is said in one of the Sanskrit shlokas, Kala karoti karyani kala eva nihanti cha. It is only the time which does all the actions, or responsible for all the actions, or it is the time which is also responsible for the ending or destruction of all actions for that matter. Well, kala is defined, it is classified into two categories. One is paramarthika, real time, and the other is vyavaharika, empirical time. And the real time or paramarthika time is indivisible, and that is the conceptual level. As far as it is only with respect to the vyavaharika or empirical time, which is divided into seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, and months, years, and so on. Like time, the rituals also have most of these characteristics, like continuity. The rituals have to be continuously performed. They are also subject to change. That is why we have so many Grihya Sutras. And with the passage of time, a good number of preliminary rituals have also been incorporated into it, and several other rituals have gone into the body of each one of these individual rituals for that matter. And action, well, as we see, apparently it's all rituals are action oriented, and they have new characteristics and old characteristics. They retain the core of the original rituals, the old rituals, and many important ceremonies have been added to it in course of time, as we have seen in the history of the growth of the rituals. Then, and the rituals are also connected to both the Vyavaharika time and Paramarthika time. And as for Vyavaharika time, we have seen that proper time is chosen for every one of these rituals. An auspicious time is chosen and then it's connected. Like time, space is also infinite, eternal, and imperceptible. It is inferred as the condition of the extension. Well, all substances except time have extension, and extension is afforded only in space. Space itself is not extension, but it is the locus of extension. There are two kinds of space which are distinguished. One is known as loka akasha, the space where movement is possible. And the other is aloka akasha, the space where movement is not possible. It is just what we call as the all-pervading space, which has no other space for movement. And akasha, for that matter, ether, is the substratum of sound, as we have seen in the Vaisheshika definition, shabda gunakam akasham. Space has an important role to play in the rituals as well. The space of an altar, the space, the measurements, the space and place of a marriage hall, an auspicious place, and the space of certain rituals like the river bank. Certain rituals have to be performed on the river bank of a river. And then space or place of rituals of the dead, which has to be done only in the cremation ground. Where all these references to space have got some relevance to the Grihya ceremonies, and that's what we have seen in the course of these, the introduction with respect to space and time that are involved in the rituals. Let us descend down from the space and time concept and come to the mundane things and look upon some of the social, cultural and religious aspects of the rituals. The first point that we are going to take up is about the caste system, which is much talked about, much maligned, and there are so many theories about the caste system, whether it is good or bad, how it has come about, and all these things have been discussed in books on the sociological conditions of ancient India and their respective areas. But as far as the rituals are concerned, well, the samskaras are meant to be performed by people belonging to all the varnas. There may be certain differences. For example, in some of the rituals, the name of the Shudras, they are not mentioned, but then it is implied what is applicable for the other three varnas are applicable to them also. That is the intended sense. Because when we say all samskaras meant for all the varnas, then they are also included. For example, the Chudakarna, that is wearing the tuft, then the headdress is arranged. Even with respect to the ears, there are some differences shown. For Brahmins, it has to be conducted during the third year. For the Kshatriyas, it is fifth year. For the Vaishyas, it is in the seventh year. And for Shudras, it is in the ninth year. And after the performance of the Upanayana, when a student is initiated into the Gayatri, he is supposed to recite the Gayatri mantra. Well, we are under the impression that there is only one Gayatri, but then there are three Gayatris which are mentioned. They don't give them the name Gayatri for them. Gayatri for the Brahmins, Om Tatsavitruvarenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimihi Diyo Yonu Prachodayat, that has to be recited for them. But for the Kshatriyas, it is known as Trishtup. Gayatri, we may remember, is also a name of a meter. Trishtup is the name of a meter, Jagati is the name of a meter. Gayatri is so-called because it is in the Gayatri meter. But then the etymological derivation also we have seen in one of the lectures. Gayantam trayate iti Gayatri. It sustains a person who chants it. And it is also with reference to the meter in which it is composed. 8 syllables of 3 stanzas, that is Gayatri. Now we come to the Kshatriyas. They are supposed to recite the Trishtup mantra. Krishne Radasa Vartamano Niveshayan Amrutam Matyancha Hiranyena Savitaratena Devoyati Bhunani Pashyan. That is the mantra that they are supposed to recite. Well, the meaning is given in translations. It again refers to Savita, just as in the Gayatri it is referenced to with reference to Savita. Here also it is Savita again, but it's only a different mantra and a different meter, Trishtup meter. Savita comes here pervading the entire earth and all the three worlds. He looks upon every creature. He remains in the immortal world, and he comes out from his firmament, advancing towards the earth. Well, that is the meaning of this mantra that we recited just now. And then we have another mantra called Jagati, which is prescribed for the Vaishyas. It is so called because it is the Jagati meter. Hagum shashuchichat vasurantarikshasat hotavedishat atitir duronasat nrishat varasat ritasat vyomasat abja goja rataja adrija ritam. That is the mantra that they have to recite, just as the Brahmins are supposed to recite the Gayatri mantra. The Hamsa, emitting light, the Vasu in the mid-air, the priest who is beside the altar, the fire altar, and in the house, the guest, the dweller in the noblest place, the mid-men in Ruta, that is truth, and those in the sky, and those born of flood, the cows, the truth, the mountain, well, he is the giver of holy law for every one of them. That is the this mantra is included in some of the Upanishads also. In the Kathopanishad, for example, it is simply repeated. We find it in the 4th mandala of the Rigveda originally, and then it is incorporated into the Upanishads as well because of its philosophical idea. It is with reference to the Supreme Brahman, who travels, who pervades everything, who surveys all these things, and he is responsible for all the entire creature, and several ideas are given here. But then there are certain difference of opinion among the Griha Sutra writers. One of the middle-aged Griha Sutra writer, Paraskara, in his Paraskara Griha Sutra, he says, no, no, Gayatri Mantra is applicable for all the people. We need not have Trishtup and Jagati separately for the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. Let Gayatri be recited by everybody, he says. Well, we have seen some ideas about the naming ceremony, how 3 types of names are said to be given. One, a secret name, and the other, the Nakshatra Namadeya, and of course, a name of, say, with so many syllables and with so many letters in it. All these things we have seen. In one of the Griha Sutra, it is said, again in a Griha Sutra composed by Paraskara, the Brahmins must take the name Sharma along with their actual name, Rama or Rama Sharma. Sharma must be added with the name, and Kshatriya should add the term Varma with them, and Vaishyas must add Gupta with their name. That is the idea that is given with respect to the naming ceremony. And whenever they have to distribute gifts also, some difference is shown. The Brahmins are supposed to give away cows as gifts, and the kings are expected to give away villages, and Vaishyas can distribute horses as gifts. As we browse through the Griha Sutra tradition, we find that the Brahmins did enjoy certain privileges In every ritual, they are fed, they are called for, they officiate as priests. They sometimes act on behalf of the performer. They can take the darbar grass from them and they themselves will perform. You need not recite the mantra, you can be simply sitting aside and watching. And also, at the same time, we find that the caste system, as we find in the Grihastha tradition, is not very rigid. Because certain expiation, atonement ceremonies are prescribed if one one marries a girl from the other community, mixed marriage. If there is a mixed marriage, don't bother, you can perform an atonement ceremony, an expiation ceremony, and you are pardoned. So that gives us an idea that it was not very rigid, at least theoretically, though practically it did not happen. So we can look into some ideas about the marriage and position of women. Well, we find that in Middle Ages, child marriage was prevalent. But as for the Grihastha tradition is concerned, there is no support for child marriage. Because along the marriage, it is suggested that the nuptials, the Chaturthi Karma, has to be performed on the fourth day. So if a girl were to be ready for nuptials, then it indicates that it is not a child marriage. And nowhere it is said this should be, the girl should be married at the age of 5 or 10, well, we don't find any such reference at all in any of the Grihastha Sutras for that matter. It must have come into being only in the Middle Ages. Then we have seen about 8 forms of marriage, the Brahma type of vivaha, Rakshasa type of vivaha, and all those things. None of them also speaks about the dowry system, though this evil came into being sometime during the Middle Ages only. In some of the cases, there is a reference to the bridal fee. Only the bridegroom offers something to the bride's party and requests that the girl may be married to him. And when we go through the Grihastha tradition, we find that monogamy was the order of the day. The women were highly respected because many of the Grihasutras, starting from Ashwarayana Grihasutra and Apastamba Grihasutra, they say very specifically, explicitly, that whenever you have a doubt with respect to the performance of a ritual, ask the elderly women in the house. They are the authorities with respect to the local traditions and the household traditions, which are as important as the set out traditions in the text. And then there is also one of the preliminaries known as Matrika Pujana, where elderly women who are departed, for them worship is offered. Well, polygamy, we don't find many references to this idea, but it seems the kings were allowed to marry many women. Bahuvallabaha rajanaha shruyante, says Kalidasa himself. Kings are expected to marry, they can marry any number of wives. And therefore, perhaps we only look from this angle, perhaps, we find an interesting idea in one of the Grihasutras called Apastambha's Grihasutra, where if there are co-wives, how do you entice your husband and keep him under your control? The girl's father or brother, he has to perform a fire ritual, a homa and oblation, and the day should be an auspicious day with the Purarvasu nakshatra, and then the lady concerned should somehow fetch a particular herb called Pata. It's known as Pata. She must go to that particular spot, and then she must sprinkle 21 paddy seeds around that particular herb with a chant. Yadi varunayasi varunatva nishkrinami, yadi saumyasi somatva nishkrinami. And then the next morning, she should pluck out the herb with its root with the chant of a mantra. Imam khanami voshadhim. Voshadhim means a herb. Virudham balavattamam, very powerful. Yatha sapatnim badhate, so that the co-wife will be bothered. yatha samvindate patim, so that I can fetch my husband, or I can retain my husband for myself. And then it is sanctified, that particular root which is cut out, and it should be cut into two, and it should be tied to her hand, and it should not be seen by the husband, and she should utter one more mantra and embrace her husband also at night. Well, if she can do that, she can stop the influence of the co-wives and retain husband well in her control.
What happens if all the other wives have done the same thing?
Yes. What is... How,
so whoever pronounces the
yes.
words correctly,
if the other
gets
girl,
it.
If the other Swapati co-wife also adopts the same technique, well, whoever pronounces the mantra correctly and understands the meaning of the mantra, well, she will become more powerful, because the power of the mantra can bring you this benefit. Mantras are in Sanskrit. So all women should learn Sanskrit and should learn correctly and also pronounce correctly, which I recommend strongly, but inconsequential to the ritual that we have seen. There is no reference to polygamy in the Grihya tradition. I mean polyandry. Well, the Ramayana stood for the concept of one man, one wife, monogamy, and it has gone deep into the tradition throughout India. One should live like Rama. That is the idea that has spread.
Not like this.
Not like reference to polyandry. Though Draupadi is married to five husbands, fortunately this particular practice did not get any sanction, and is nowhere mentioned in any of the Grihya Sutras. There are also certain instances of widow remarriage in some of the Grihya Sutras. In fact, we find that even in the Rigveda, certain instances, when the girl loses her husband, the husband's brother is eligible to marry her, and she should continue the tradition, the family. Well, as for Sati, there is absolutely no reference to the Grihya Sutra, no support. And there is no reference at all. And if it has come into practice, well, originally perhaps it was not compulsory, it was left to the option of the girl concerned. But then perhaps foreign rule, Muslim invasion, and girls being molested, and therefore the girls perhaps thought, instead of getting molested, let me jump to the fire and save my honor. That would have been the idea. Well, as far as rights of women are concerned, as we see from the Saptapadi rite in the Grihya tradition, equal rights was thought of with both men and women. Manoham asmi vakpam. I am the mind, you are the speech. And I am the sky, you are the earth. Both have equal rights. That is the idea that we get in the Grihya Sutras. But perhaps later, the women, the wife was confined to the house and was very zealously protected. Again, I will have to assign the reason to the foreign invasion. So because of this, the women being considered as rather weak, and one has to protect her from the external influences, the request for male progeny is very often found in the Grihya Sutras. Separate ceremony called Pumsavana, aspiring for a male child, that we find. And before the marriage, we find in the Grihya Sutras the reference that one must enquire into the background, the family background of both the bride and bridegroom. But that gives us an idea that marriage within close relatives was not perhaps apprehended. Well, we have one interesting reference in one of the Grihya Sutras called Gobhila Grihya Sutra. Well, how to test whether a girl is suitable for the family or not? 8 clods of earth has to be collected from several places. From the fire altar, from a nearby field, from a pool where water is still there, from a cow stable, at the junction of 4 roads, from a gambling hall, from a cremation ground, and from a barren spot. Keep them all in a row and ask the girl to select it. From the selection she makes, the girl is judged.
How many selections?
Eight. If she selects the clod that has the earth that's been collected from the fire altar, well, she will get holy offspring. If she selects the one from the field, then she will be rich in food. And she, if she selects the clod from the muddy pool, then she will be prosperous. If it's from a cow stable, she will have rich cattle strength. If she selects the mud that is collected from the junction of four roads, then she will be very unsteady. If she selects the one from the gambling hall, she will be very irresponsible. If she selects the one from the cremation ground, she may bring death to the husband and some of the members of the family. If, on the other hand, she selects the mud from a barren spot, then she may turn out to be a barren woman and may not bear the child. Well, some of these are magic element. They have magic element in them. It is left to us to believe in them or not. Well, there is an area called Chettinad in Tamil Nadu. They have a peculiar system of selecting a bride. They will ask her to plunge her legs into a quagmire, a muddy pool. And then she will just, they will just give her a mug of water. She has to clean her legs and then come into the floor, step onto the floor. Well, if the mud is sticking to her, which can be judged by the steps that she has taken, then one can judge that she has not cleaned her legs properly. And if she has exhausted the entire water of that mug, then she is likely to be a spendthrift. But with the limited water, if she cleans her head, the legs cleanly also, then she is supposed to be a good wife for the family.
Still some people are doing so.
Yes.
So
it all
right.
Depends how much
she
has to
do. Yes,
yes.
Good, big feet.
Before marriage, is learning to clean your feet with half a mug of water.
Yes. Water scarcity in Chennai? Yeah. This will be definitely useful even in today's context. Or another way of another way of testing the girl. She is supposed to bring betel leaves, betel nut, and the white lime. These have to be associated, they have to be applied and then given to somebody. It has to be in right proportion, correct proportion. If there is too much of that white lime, it will burn your mouth. If it is very little, it will not have the desired effect. So they will judge whether she is able to apply them correctly and give. This is another way of testing in a fitting proportion. So in any case, we find that these tests do not recommend marriage within the family, because if it is within the family, no such test is necessary. But unfortunately or fortunately, in Tamil Nadu, there is a peculiar system. I must say that marriage should not take place within the Sapinda relationship, that is said. That is, the elder brother's son or daughter should not get married to the counterpart, the younger brother. They are called Sapinda relationship, or the first cousin. So this Sapinda relationship goes on till the fifth generation, sometimes seventh generation also, the husband's family. But in Tamil Nadu peculiarly, the other relationship is permitted. In fact, it's a matter of right to claim the girl of the sister's, the father's sister's son or daughter, which is also equally a close relationship. But then somehow this has come into being in Tamil Nadu as a rightful claim.
What about sister's daughter?
Two sisters' children.
Yeah, sister's daughter also.
Niece.
No, two sisters' children can't marry.
No.
Yeah, not
two
sisters.
Two
brothers'
sisters.
No,
brothers. In fact,
yeah.
two brothers and two sisters. Those
no.
two
yeah.
can't marry.
Yes.
But the children
brother.
Of a brother and sister can marry.
Mm.
There's no logic in that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Legitimate.
Just for medical
No, there's no medical. We contrive the medical reason later on.
Later on.
It creates a lot of genetic problems.
Yes,
I would imagine, yeah.
Yes, marriage within the close relationship.
Yeah.
But then perhaps the situation was like that. the closely knit family, the family property should not be.
Yeah, that's the
thing. Keep the wealth.
The wealth is not
bloodline.
Yeah. And then again, you know, the foreign invasion, all those things. You know, any time anything may happen within the close family, quickly arrange the marriage instead of waiting for a good bride from some other family or searching for it. And then means of communication, transport, they were not very. So, in the same village, in a known family, relatively known family, within the family, that's supposed to be a very safe marriage. We go on to the next point, means the family life. Joint family was the order of the day. Because we find in the marriage ritual that when the girl is taken to her husband's place, Griha Pravesha ceremony, the husband recites a stanza, Samragye Shvashure Bhava, Samragye Shvashurvam Bhava, Sanandari Samshurvam Bhava, and Samragni Adidev Rishu. May you be a leader or a mistress of the entire family, this idea. One by one, the relationship is may you be the commander of your father in law, and your mother in law, your sister in law, and brothers in law. So that means there are always the joint family. And a father who goes on a trip somewhere and returns after some time, he must come back and fondle his children with the utterance of mantra. Angad angad sambhavati hridayat anijhayase atma vai putra namasi tvanjiva saradashatam. You are born out of my limbs, every limb of mine. And you are born from my very heart. And you are myself in the form of a son. May you live for 100 years. So that family bondage, the family love, is very clearly reflected in such practices. And then we find that even in the marriage ritual, the saptapadi and other rites, that the duties and responsibilities of husband and wife were shared equally. Both of them had equal responsibilities in the family, as evident from the yoke ritual. A yoke is placed on the head of the wife in the course of this wedding ritual, and then that yoke is a symbol of uniform progress, just as a yoke can unite the two oxen for a cart for the smooth movement. So also it is the responsibility of both husband and wife to run the family efficiently with a uniform mind and heart and deed. We come to the next point, dress and decoration. Normally two-piece garment is recommended. One must have one lower garment and then one uttariya, the upper garment.
It's only for men, isn't it?
Yes, even for women. And one should never wear a single garment. That a single garment is worn only at the time of performing the obsequies ceremonies for the departed people. And therefore, and then one of the Girhi Sutra writers, by name Paraskara, he said, if by chance in any place your upper garment is not available, you can at least convert the portion of your lower garment as the upper garment and wear it. You will never be without that. And even for Brahmacharya, for that matter, he must have the lower garment, one piece garment, and then he should cover himself with a black antelope skin, which is given to him in a ceremonial way at the time of Upanayana. And some of the Griha Sutras say there are certain treatises called Aranyakas attached to the Vedas. The Vedas are taught, and then the Aranyaka text and the Brahmana text and the Upanishads, they are also taught. All of them constitute the Vedic study. The Vedas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas and Upanishads attached to each Veda. Aranyakas literally means the forest text. They are partly theological, partly philosophical. And when this Aranyaka texts are taught, the student is supposed to wear a turban. For what purpose? Well, we do not know. Well, that is simply recommended, that's all. We find many references to many of these types of garments, the cotton, the silk garments. The bride is supposed to wear a silken garment. In some traditions, it's a white garment, some traditions it is multicolored. And then in the course of the Upanayana, we find a mantra being recited when the garment is offered to him. We offer our salutations to the deities who bit the cotton and removed the seeds, and the gods who made it into a yarn, and the gods who made it into, who wove it into a cloth, and the deities who cut it into the proper size, and again the deities who provided the border. So all this we understand that, the garment is made like this, and then one should not wear a garment without the border. And a deity with reference to a border is given, and therefore the intended sense is that one should always wear a garment that has a border. Without border we should not wear. And then we also have reference to the Chura Karana, that is hair dressing, hair cutting ceremony. And it is also recommended during when the wife is pregnant, the husband is not supposed to have a shave. He sports a beard. And with respect to the Simantonna in a ceremony, we find the parting of the hair is a very important ritual. When the girl is pregnant, in the 7th or 8th month it is performed. So that indicates that women used to, even though they do, they sport a long hair. And we also find several references to the holy bath that one has to take, and the scents, several kind of scent and other, say sandal and other things which are used very often with reference to many of the Griha ceremonies, garlands, used often flowers, and many such ornaments are and important things are used. We will go on to some of the magical practices, the magic rituals, element of magic in some of the rituals. There are two types of such magic rituals. The ones that ensure are supposed to ensure good fortune and prevent misfortune. And number two, those that are in the nature of atonement or expiation. We have seen some of these ceremonies, like Anavalobhana, prevention of abortion, and a ritual for a safe delivery, and a performance of a ritual called Shoshayanti Karma. A herb called Shoshayanti is brought, and it is tied to the feet of the woman who is about to deliver. And this is supposed to bless the woman and prevent any miscarriage and help her to deliver the child peacefully. And then at the birth of a child, at the entrance of the house, entrance of the room where the birth has taken place, the fire has to be kindled, and a mixture of mustard seeds and the rice husk is to be thrown into the fire. It is supposed to ward off all the evil effects and prevent any diseases for the child. We have also seen some magical practices with respect to Namakarana, a secret name being given to a child, because the sorcerers and practitioners of witchcraft, they will use the name, the original name which is given to the child, and then they may cause some harm. Then in order to prevent that, the actual name is kept very, very secret. It's called a secret name, and nobody else will know, only the parents and the child when it grows old. And the first time when the child is fed, annaprasana is again performed, mixture of honey and ghee they are given. And then also when the child is taken out for the first time, when it's taken out of the house, nishkramana. These are all some of the rituals where some magical element is definitely found. If one were to practice trade, there is a ritual for the sake of prosperity in trade, which is described in one of the Griha Sutras composed by Hiranyakeshin. That is, one must cut some portion of every articles of trade and perform a sacrifice. If you are dealing with the vegetables, perhaps you can cut pieces of brinjal or lady's finger and all the vegetables and then perform a homa safely. And the person also concerned should also recite an appropriate verse which will have the meaning. If we are going to trade like this, O gods, to acquire new wealth, may Soma, Indra and also Brahma protect us. There are also certain peculiar practices with respect to naming a child in Tamil Nadu, for example. Supposing there are quite a few miscarriages and say 3 or 4 deaths in infant mortality, and then the third or fourth child is born, then he is given a peculiar name like Kuppu. Kuppu means garbage, or Pichai. Pichai means begging. Some names like this are given, and this is supposed to ward off any evil effect, and this will help the child to survive, it seems. And there are also certain number of local practices which have been incorporated into some of these Grihya traditions. Like, for instance, in Tamil Nadu, a mock departure to Kashi. The bridegroom makes a mock departure to Kashi, known as Kashi Yatra. He will have a bundle of rice and all those things, and he will just take hardly a few steps. Meanwhile, the bride's father will come running and request, "I am giving my daughter in marriage to you, please don't go to Kashi." And the bridegroom will say, "All right," he will oblige, and he will return back. And in Karnataka, the bridegroom has to paint the feet of his wife, and the girl should utter her husband's name. Normally, in South India, the married women are not supposed to utter the name of their husband. They don't utter. They will have some wild reference, so-and-so, my husband, so-and-so, they will say, but they won't utter the name. That practice has been. And this girl, when she is asked to utter the name of the husband, well, she will be shy, but somehow she will, in a contrived way, she will say, sing a song where the name of her husband will be coinciding with the name of some deity. In Maharashtra, there is a peculiar practice. The bridegroom writes the name of his wife in a plate of rice. In Uttar Pradesh, there is an area called Mithila, where a mock play takes place between the husband and wife, just before the nuptials. They are supposed to fold and unfold a mat 5 times. We do not know what purpose. According to Shankaya Grihya Sutra, another one of the Grihya Sutras, the bride's father or brother, they will perform a homa into the holy fire, holding a sword on the head of the bride, very gently, of course. And in Karnataka also there is a similar practice, but here the concerned person need not hold the sword on the head of the bride very precariously. The sword is held on to a lamp which is burning, and the black soot will be deposited on the sword, and that black soot deposit carbon.
What is the sword?
Sword.
Sword.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Sword. Yeah. Sorry.
And that black soot will be mixed with oil, and the husband and wife should wear it on their forehead. Kerala Nambudri Brahmins, as I say here, the husband and wife should hold their heads together at the time of the marriage ritual for some time. And then in Maithila tradition, there is another peculiar practice. The bride, before her actual marriage, performs a symbolic marriage to a nearby mango tree. And in Gujarat, the worship of a river is recommended before the bride leaves for her husband's place. In fact, there is a practice, it says, the people who are parting, that is, who are departing, they must be seen off till a water resort. Vodakantam drashtavyani snigdha janani. Relatives, unknown people, you will have to go with them and leave them off at a water resort, to a river or a pond or a lake. So perhaps this practice belongs to that tradition. And then in Gujarat again, 7 heaps of rice are kept, and then worship is offered to it, with the idea that the family should have plenty of abundant food. Well, anybody here wants to have 100 cartloads of gold?
No.
Well, I asked this question in one of the lectures in my Indian audience. Everybody kept quiet. Then I was very happy. I said, oh, this is the spirit of renunciation that has been enunciated in our scriptures. Wealth is fleeting by nature. And if you don't want it, 100 cartloads of gold, well, that shows you the spirit. But still, I would like to know why you reject it, you don't want it. One of them hesitantly stood up and said, I want more than 100 cartloads, not just 100 cartloads. But in any case, this is described in one of the Griha Sutras, a very interesting place. A person who wants 100 cartloads of gold must fast through entire fortnight. So 15 days he must fast and feed the priests have to be fed with the boiled rice and milk on the first day of the dark fortnight. And then with some small grains of the rice which is remaining, he should perform a homa, an oblation to the deities known as Phala and Palla, day after day for about 15 days, at the time of twilight. And that too on a place to the west of the village, where he has besmeared the area with the cow dung and observes the austerities. This ritual is given in one of the Griha Sutras composed by Khadira's Griha Sutra. Do you want to acquire a village? Well, there is a ritual. Go eastwards to the outskirts of the village. Brush up an elevated surface. Raise a small hill of the dung of the beasts of the forest and set it on fire. Then after some time, when the fire dies down, sweep the coals, it should not die down completely. Sweep the coal away, the black coal and everything, but retain the fire. Make an oblation of ghee into the fire through the mouth. If the butter catches fire, you will become the owner of 12 villages. If smoke alone arises, you will get at least 3 villages.
What happens if the individual catches fire by mistake?
Then he belongs to himself. He belongs to the other world. He goes to the other world.
Yeah, I just feel that some of these sutras...
So some of these have got... Any questions?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I won't interrupt now. Thank you.
So there are also magical formulae to become a ruler of a country or acquiring cattle, acquiring wealth, all these things. There are many expiation atonement ceremonies. For example, when a place is infested with the snakes, you must utter a prayer dedicated to Rudra. If you get up after sunrise, one should always get up before sunrise. If you get up very late after sunrise, you must fast for the day and keep silent.
Good
God,
I have to stay silent every day.
We would never eat.
When you set out, if you see a she-jackal or she-wolf or an owl, then you must murmur an appropriate prayer that is specified. If there is incessant lightning, then one should utter the names of Arjuna, the Mahabharata hero. Arjuna, Partha, Kiriti, Pandava, Shvetavahana, etc. It goes on. About 11 to 12 names he has gotten, they must be uttered. There is incessant lightning and all that. There are many superstitions. The southern direction is always supposed to be very, ill omen. One should never set out towards south. So always first step towards the east, and then if you want to turn south, step towards east, take a few steps towards eastern direction, then turn to the south. Throbbing of the eye is supposed to be an ill omen. This particular eye for men, this particular eye for women, it is said. Well, if you have observed certain ill omens, but still you have to proceed, what do you do? You should come back to the house, offer prayers to your deity, and then set out. Certain manners, morals, habits, and customs are also described in they alluded to in the Griha Sutras. Well, hospitality, Atithi Yajna, is to be performed every day. Atithi, guests have to be honored. Well, we find during the performance of Shraddha, the annual ceremony for the departed fathers, the priests have to be invited, three or four of them. Their feet have to be washed in a particular fashion. They have to be offered dhotis and upper garment, and then they have to be offered food and their fee, and they have to be inferred whether everything is all right. Please eat well so that you don't have to eat at night. Please eat silently so that you can consume more. Who are the important guests? A teacher, a Ritvik priest, a father-in-law, son-in-law, a king, and a snataka, a brahmachari who just returns after finishing his studies. He is called a snataka. These are considered to be important guests. And as we see from the Upanayana ceremony, we are almost running out of time. I will just one or two points and conclude. The teacher is held in high esteem, as we see in the Upanayana ceremony. Number of instructions are given by the teacher, and the student he obeys them without any question. Because it is said, Acharyavan Purusho Veda. A man is a man only if he has a teacher, a proper teacher. He is called Guru, a teacher called Guru, because he is one who dispels the darkness of ignorance. Gurushabdastu Andhakaraha, Gurushabdastan Nivarakaha, Andhakara Nirodhitva, Guru Ritya Vidhiyate. Gu refers to Andhakara in the internal darkness, ignorance. And Ru means Runaddhi, one who drives away, it dispels. A teacher is so called because he does that. He is called Acharya again because Achinoti Shastrartan, Achare Sthapayantyapi, Swayam Acharate Yachas Acharyam Prachakshate. He culls out information from various sources, walking encyclopedia for the matter. And he establishes all the students in their proper code of conduct. He himself practices what he preaches. Well, he is an Acharya. Well, at the time of Upanayana, the student takes a vow of serving his teacher, bringing the samit sticks, sipping the water, not to sleep during daytime, and observe austerities, and serve his teacher and be loyal to him. Well, then again, as for manners and customs, the certain moral and ethical values are enunciated in the Griha Sutras. In the performance of the daily Sandhya ritual, one has to recite a mantra, Kama Karshit Manmira Karshit Namo Namaha. May get rid of karma, desire, and manu, anger. Because these are responsible for all the ills of the malice and ill will and all these things. And so one should get rid of them. Cleanliness is stressed upon before every event. The feet and the hands have to be washed. And there is also a symbolic cleaning in the form of a performance of a ritual called Punyaha Vachana. Sanctified water is sprinkled all over the house. One should respect always the elders before the starting of the ceremony, any ritual for that matter. The performer should appeal to them, Asheshehe Parichat, I consider you as the responsible for the proper conduct of this ceremony, so unless you give permission, I cannot proceed. I anticipate your permission. So this is known as Anujnya. We also find scope for music and dance in a number of rituals. On the day prior to the marriage, the bride and her relatives, they are supposed to have an enjoyable dance in that area. And then in the ritual called Simantonnayana, at the conclusion of the main ceremony, Veena Gana, the Veena recital has to be arranged, and one should hear that. And in the space of the marriage ritual itself, there are a lot of scope for music and dance. When the bride and bridegroom exchange garlands, a particular song is rendered. And then, when they are seated on the swing, some traditional songs are rendered. Well, there are also references to some important points with respect to food and drink. We have seen many of them in our paper on the food habits. Therefore, I don't think we have to repeat them. But one thing that is stressed upon is that good thought, good word, and good deed, they are all result of good food. And therefore, your food, the quality of the food is very important in all these rituals. And on certain occasions, like during the Upanayana, and again immediately after the marriage, just before the Chaturthi Karma in Vivaha, the concerned person should avoid very spicy food, and they should avoid salt and very hot food, very docile and the sattvic food they are supposed to take. As for occupation, well, there are many references to agricultural ploughing and carpentry, because the wife, the bride and bridegroom, they depart to the bridegroom's house in on a chariot, carts, and then weaving, and also as we have seen in the previous mantra, beating the cotton, and then yarn making, and then weaving, all these things are referred to, as we have seen. Flora and fauna were snakes. In those days, the houses were infested with a lot of snakes, and therefore the sort of shravana sacrifice is performed when a person enters a house in order to ward off the snakes. And in the, there is an interesting reference. There is a ceremony called Annaprashna, when the child is introduced into the solid food for the first time. Well, it is said, because we have seen that flesh eating was not prohibited in the earlier Grihya Sutra period at least. In Ashulayana Grihya Sutra, which is one of the earliest Grihya Sutra, it is said, the flesh of a bird called Bharadvaja, it is recommended for the fluency of speech. And flesh of partridge, that is recommended for nourishment. The fish is recommended for swiftness. And flesh of a bird called Krikasha is recommended for long life. And then flesh of a bird called Ati is recommended for holy luster. We have references to a number of plants, the Gudumbara, Palasa, Ashwatha, Nigrodha, all these things we have referred to in course of our earlier lectures. So I don't want to repeat them. But only one reference I would like to say, the Samit stick is very important for every ritual for that matter, and therefore during the Upanayana, the boy is requested to help the teacher in acquiring the Samit sticks. And it is part and parcel of the ritual, as we find from the Mahabharata verse. For example, Dhriti Kshama Daya Shaucham Karunyam Vag Anishthira Mikstranam Cha Anavidroha Sattayitaha Samidashriyaha. If prosperity were to be considered as a ritual, what are the Samit sticks which are associated with that particular ritual? 7 Samit sticks that is necessary for this ritual, prosperity for that matter. What are they? Dhriti, courage; Kshama, forbearance; Daya, compassion; Shaucham, purity; Karunyam, sympathy; Anishtura, vak, sweet speech that doesn't harm others; and Mitranam, anavidroha, not doing any injury to the friends. Well, no treachery, but no friends. These are the 7 Samit sticks for the ritual in the form of prosperity, if you want. There are many references to the Maunji grass, several types of grass. For instance, the Maunji grass is supposed to be tied by the teacher for the on the waist of the boy for whom the Upanayana is performed. And then again we find that the wife is also tied with the rope of darbha grass during the ceremony. There are many references to house building. Ashvalayana Griha Sutra says you must select an undisputed land naturally, and it should be non-salinous, and as you observe there should be growth of grass and herbs and trees in that spot, and should be grassy. It should be neither dry nor swampy. And then an idea of soil test is also given. Dug a pit of say 1 foot by 1 foot, and depth also 1 foot. Take out the earth, and then fill up that mud again with pour into the pit. Well, if it outreaches, naturally, normally it will be expected, then that particular place is good, there is a good soil test. If the earth that you fill up, if it fills up the pit, then it's just ordinary, middle level. Other hand, if it doesn't fill up at all, then you must reject that kind of land. Another test is also given. Dug a pit like this, is the same way as we said, in the night, fill it up with water. Observe it in the next day morning. If the water is still there, then it is supposed to be a very fine, good place, suitable land for building. If you find just some moisture, then it's okay, middle level. If it is completely dry, you must reject that kind of land. then if it is already certain big trees like Ashwatha, etc. in the on the border of the land, I mean you should not select it. Because when you put up a building, these big trees, their roots will uproot the foundation.
Mm.
And regarding the fixing of the door, you must, if you fix the door on the east, if you want fame, then you fix up a door on the east. If you want children, put it up on the northern direction. If you want good breeze, have it on the south. If you want good afternoon sunlight, have it on the west. A greedy person wanted to have all these things. So he put up doors on all the directions. And ultimately he ruined himself because it became an easy access for the thieves. Doors on all sides. There is also a reference that the back door and the front door should not be on the same line. They should not face each other. Digging of a well, all this is very important. An auspicious day is selected. Similarly, laying the foundation, fixing the door, all these things are supposed to be very auspicious things, and therefore we have to select an auspicious day for all these things. And Griha Pravesha, when everything is over, when you enter the new house, several ceremonies are to be performed. The devatas, the several deities, the Navagrahas, all the deities have to be pleased with the performance of Homa. And as you enter, the first, a cow with a calf must be allowed to enter the house. And then the wife enters with a pot of water in her hand, and then only the husband follows. And then in the course of the ritual, the sanctified water should be poured around the entire building, and some pujas have to be offered for the doors and windows and all that. Well, there are a lot of references or important ideas with respect to the astrology and astronomy in the performance of rituals. The Dhruva star is shown to the wife during the marriage ritual. For all rituals, auspicious days are fixed and selected, and planets and stars are worshipped. And even before the bridegroom or bride is selected, their charts are compared, and only if they match, the marriage takes place. Well, education is an important aspect. That is the last point in our lecture. Though we have crossed our time, we started a bit late, and therefore. Well, the Upanayana ceremony is itself performed for the sake of education, the educational rite. And in the educational system, first one has to study one's own Veda. Svadhyayo adhyayata yukaha. If a person belongs to Yajurveda, he must study Yajurveda first. If he belongs to Rigveda, he must study Rigveda first. And then all the Angas are also, Angas of the Vedas, the Shadangas, six Angas, six auxiliary sciences, they are also to be studied. The six auxiliary sciences are Shiksha, Chandas, Vyakarna, Nirukta, Jyotisha, Kalpa. The science of phonetics that is involved in the Vedas, and the meter, metrical science, Vedic grammar, science of etymology, the astrology, and the Kalpa Sutras deal with the engineering aspects, the construction of the sacrificial hall and all that, and also performance of rituals. And then it is not enough if he memorizes the Vedas as it is in the textual portion, the Samhita portion. Elaborate arrangements have been made to preserve the Vedas in their traditional way without any, say, mutilation or any loss of the textual material by recitation in the form of what are known as the Padapata. Every word is separated and then it is recited. And then Ganapata, the permutation and combination, 1, 2, 3, 2, 3, 1, 3, 1, 2, like that it will go on. A, B, C, B, C, B, A, B, C, A, like that, in a complicated variety.
That's an example of actual word.
Well, I will find out whether we have time at the end, then we will try to recite. So this is how, in a very complicated way, and applying all the permutations and combinations, the Vedas preserve elaborate recitation types. And this helped the preservation of Vedas without any change only by oral tradition for centuries, several centuries. It was not committed to writing at all. And the study of Vedas is also accompanied by all this grammar and etymology and all that. So that means one has to know the meaning of the Vedas also. And it said, Sthanurayam Bharaharaha, Yo Adhitya Vedam, Yo Vijanati Nartham. One who simply memorizes the Vedas, who does not know the meaning, he is like, you know, like a stone slab which simply bears the weight. He bears the weight of the Vedas but doesn't know the meaning. In those days, people used to go only by walk, or many of them used to go by walk. And there will be a stone slab fixed with a standing slab, and then one stone slab on them to, you know, to keep the weight on them so they can rest for a while. So this stone slab will not know whether it is a basket of gold or a basket of any cow dung or whatever. It simply bears. Does not know the value of it.
Mm-hmm.
A person who does not know the meaning of the Vedas simply decides that he is like that, it is said. And then in addition to the Vedas, one is also supposed to master the Upavedas, like Dhanurveda, Ayurveda, etc. Then at the end of the study, the teacher performs a convocation. There is a convocation address. Veda manuchya asadhyya ante vasina manushasti satyam vada dharmam chara swadhyayo adhyetadhyaya. Like that goes on. Satyam vada. And then matrudevo bhava, pitrudevo bhava, acharya devo bhava, atithi devo bhava. Yanyanavadhyani karmani, tani sevitavyani, noitarani. Very beautiful convocation address at the end of the study. It is recited by the teacher. All the necessary instructions for a beautiful life, a wonderful life, are given to him in the form of this instruction. And then he goes back to us. So I think we complete this seventh lecture with this type of information. As a cursory glance will give us an idea that they are complete in all respects. And one who performs the rituals in a proper manner, he will be leading a good moral life of values and good instructions, and he will have nothing to worry in leading a peaceful life. Thank you very much for listening. Open for questions.
Thank you.
Why is everybody looking at me?
When did the Swayamvara come into existence, and when did it go out?
There are
didn't marry the proper way.
Yeah, they married in the Gandharva style of marriage. But Nala and Damayanti, that's Swayamvara, as you say. Well, even in the Rigveda, there are one or two references to Swayamvara type of marriage. The girl, the princess, for example, she, then assemblage of the kings, they'll all be informed. And large number of kings and princes, they will be assembled in the hall. The girl with the garland in her hand, she will be introduced to each one of them. She can select anybody, whomever she likes. That's called known as Swayamvara. Sometimes there will be some tests. Whoever passes that test, as we find in the Ramayana, and also in the Mahabharata. That's another kind of. So it is an age-old practice. Well, that gives us an idea that getting a good girl for the family was very difficult. And so she has the choice. And these fellows are longing. They will come and sit and will be watching whether she will garland me or not.
That's only if she's a princess.
Hmm?
That's only if she's a princess.
Yeah. Yes.
Not if she's a commoner.
Only in the royal family.
Yeah.
So it didn't happen to be common
princess? No. Not in the common.
So
it disappeared when the kings disappeared.
The girl had the freedom.
Yes.
Whereas we are making the man decide whether or not that girl should be married. At least it was the practice.
Yes, that was also there. But nowadays it has changed.
Nowadays they don't make a decision at all.
Yes.
They postpone the decision. They have got a new superstition. If they decide, the marriage will break. So if they don't get married, then nothing breaks.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
It's
so fantastic love.
How disappointed.
Stay away from the mud.
Indumati marriage.
Yes.
Indumati was
walking.
And then there is a line.
Yes.
Sanjarini.
Yes.
Deepashikayiva. Indumati.
Deepashikayiva.
Yeah. When she passes each prince gets excited because
that
she is
going to select her.
And when she leaves, it is like a dying lamp.
They become gloomy.
Really
they become gloomy. It is like the light of a torch, you know, when you go through a street. As you proceed, you ahead of you, the buildings are lighted. When you pass through that area, then that goes behind and it plunges into darkness. So these princess, when she passed by, they became gloomy. And when she was about to come on the line, they were bright.
What is this?
Indumati's marriage.
Mm-hmm.
She was a princess.
Yes.
Everyone wanted to marry her, but she passed one by one. And they were plunged into darkness.
Into darkness.
When they were
gloomy.
This Visheshika, I think this you prefer made references
to Vaisheshika.
Being a complete idiot and a novice, what is it?
Well, there are six systems of Indian philosophy.
One of the systems
is Vaisheshika. Nyaya Vaisheshika,
no,
Sankhya
okay.
Yoga,
okay,
Sankhya. Mimamsa. Yes.
And what does the Vaisheshika actually talk about?
Nyaya and Vaisheshika are actually, both of them, are actually the Indian system of logic.
The logical system.
But
okay.
The system of logic in India is such that it does not speak about only logic. They will also speak about philosophy. There will be an element of philosophy, metaphysics, all these things will be there. That is how all the systems grow.
Well, I was thinking, philosophy is a logical approach in itself. Philosophy
yes,
is
yes.
supposed to be a logical approach to any subject.
Yes, yes.
That's
the
Western concept, yes,
yes.
of philosophy.
Yes. They will also discuss about Atman.
Yeah, but
Atman is also
yeah,
one of
the categories. In the Eastern concept, philosophy is more to do with metaphysics, isn't it? The abstract thinking of the abstract.
Yeah.
There's no such hard and fast rule. The philosophy also will have some element of mythology, logic.
Yeah, it will have.
Yes.
But the very concept of philosophy in the West is it's a systematic approach in the study of a subject. I mean, that's sort of an inherent. You're hoping to come to whatever study it is, and if it's a philosophy of medicine, philosophy of history, anything you study, you're looking at something. And
because it's argumentative and it has
it
a specific
way
of proceeding argument.
That's why I say it's a systematic way of studying a particular topic.
Well, I mean,
topic.
This is systematic. Like those six categories, basically, are supposed to take into account everything that is actually possible that you can find, including non-existence.
Yes.
So it is kind of like a comprehensive examination of everything. So in that sense, it's kind of
a philosophy.
It's pretty radical, too.
Yeah.
About the substance, you have classified nine.
Yes.
But was it not prithvi, tejo, vayu, akash?
Yes, the same thing
only
I said.
Only five.
Yes. No, no. They are five elements. In addition to that, there are some more padarthas.
I see.
Yes.
I see.
The five elements plus other things like direction, dik, mind, all this. They are also included under categories.
About the sapatnis, they do some mantras to make the other one less attractive.
Yes.
Is there a mantra which will eliminate the other one?
Well, this says that it will eliminate her also. There should not be any sapatni.
If there are 10 sapatnis, she has to do 10 mantras 10 times.
She eliminated
Dasharatha.
I was wondering if you could tell me, I was a little intrigued about the rituals being associated with the two types of time, the Vyavaharika time, the Paramarthika time.
Yes.
Now, I'm not quite sure about the distinction as far as rituals are concerned, because rituals do take place in, as far as I understood,
in
Vyavaharika time.
Yes.
Because the time ritual begins at a certain point
in
time,
exactly.
It proceeds and it ends at some point in time, right?
Yes.
And the apurva is that, particular law of causation that brings about some unforeseeable future.
Yes.
Okay, now. What is the place of this paramarthika time in the ritual?
There is actually no such place of paramarthika time ritual being performed. Because paramarthika itself, when we say, it is not with reference to any particular time. But
oh, it's not a different time.
Yeah, yeah.
I see.
So, but through the performance of these rituals in the Vyavaharika time, you are led to the importance of the Paramarthika time, which is indivisible and which is just one.
I see.
Yeah.
So it's more, it's kind of open to like metaphorical interpretation.
Yes.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Good. Thank you.